headlines, Iran says its ambassador to Yemen has passed away due to COVID complications because certain countries delayed his return home for medical treatment. Iran's foreign minister is calling for a boost to international aid efforts for Afghanistan, hoping that it would stop the inflow of refugees. And New Zealand shelves plans for the reopening of its borders over concerns that the Omicron COVID variant is spreading fast across the globe. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Iran's ambassador to Yemen's National Salvation Government, Hassan Irloo, has passed away. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says that Irloo passed away this morning due to complications from COVID-19. He says that the envoy was transferred to Iran in poor health condition because certain countries delayed his flight out of Sana'a. Khatibzadeh did not name any specific country, but Saudi Arabia and its allies in the war have kept Yemen under a blockade since 2015. Yemen's main airport in Sana'a has been closed for more than 5 years now. Irloo was finally transferred to a hospital in Tehran 2 days ago. He became Iran's ambassador to Yemen's National Salvation Government last year. He was a veteran of Iran-Iraq War and had been suffering from complications of chemical attacks. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has expressed its condolences to Tehran. Saudi warplanes carry out 3 airstrikes on Sana'a International Airport as the kingdom intensifies its war in Yemen. Yemen's Civil Aviation Authority says their strikes have disrupted services at the airport. It says that there has been a halt to the delivery of humanitarian aid supplies following the air raids. The airport was targeted hours after Saudi warplanes reportedly carried out around 40 airstrikes across the provinces of Jowf and Marib. Riyadh, along with some of its regional allies, launched a devastating war against its southern neighbor in 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the onslaught. The Iranian foreign minister says that his country does not have the capacity to provide additional services to incoming Afghan refugees. According to Hossein Amir Abdullahian, more than 500,000 Afghan students are enjoying free education in Iran. He said that authorities have been vaccinating Afghan refugees and Iranian nationals alike against COVID-19. He noted that the UN's aid for Afghan asylum seekers is too small compared to what Iran has provided for them. Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a meeting with the UN's visiting High Commissioner for Refugees. He called on the international community to help improve the humanitarian situation in Afghanistan to stop the flow of refugees. Thousands of Afghans have been crossing into Iran on a daily basis since the Taliban took over the country in August. We have spoken to political commentator E. Michael Jones about Afghanistan's refugee crisis. He says the UN has done nothing to protect Afghans seeking refuge in Iran.
The wave of refugees is not something positive. I mean, God bless the Iranians for helping these people out. But this doesn't change the fact that they should remain in Afghanistan. Someone should take care of the situation in Afghanistan. Apparently the United Nations is not doing it that well. We're living through an era where migration is being weaponized. It's being weaponized against Europe. It's being weaponized on the southern border against the United States by people within the United States. The Democratic Party favors this type of unlimited migration. This is an exceptional circumstance that needs to be corrected by having the people go back to where they came from. This is not the Iranians should be working to get these people back to Afghanistan, doing whatever they can to do that.
Let's go back to our story on Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Bushali joins us now from the capital, Sana'a. Abdulatif, tell us about the latest strikes that has happened on Sana'a International Airport and any reasons why, from yesterday until now, this has been going on. So far, as far as we know, 3 strikes have occurred.
Thank you so much. The director of Sana'a International Airport held a press conference today in the morning inside the airport to show the world the damage caused to the runway of the airport and the hangars inside the airport due to the Saudi airstrikes that were launched yesterday. They are trying only to keep destroying the infrastructure of the country. They are targeting the airport, and they will get nothing from these attacks. They have been attacking the airport for 7 years now. They achieved nothing. The flights that use the airport are only the flights of the UN and the international organizations. Some of them are for aid and assistance for the Yemeni people. This will hamper the work of the international organizations working in Yemen. This will only worsen the situation in the country. The humanitarian situation is really bad. Saudi Arabia is only destroying the infrastructure of the country. They are not going to get anything from attacking the airports, the hospitals, or all the civilian facilities of the country. They are only destroying the rights of the people to use the international airport to travel abroad for the treatment. We have thousands of patients who can't travel abroad for the treatment. Most of them are children. They die every day because they don't have even a chance to use their airport to go to other countries. The Iranian ambassador to Sana'a, Mr. Hassan Erlu, died to hampering his flight from the Saudi Arabia coalition. Unfortunately, they are violating the international community, and this is taking place amid the international silence of the UN and all the international community organizations.
Yeah, since you mentioned Iran's ambassador, I'd like to ask you, we are under the impression that he was not allowed to fly out of Yemen. Can you give us more details how long it took from the time that his COVID was detected to the time that he actually was able to be taken out of the country? Because that delay is one of the reasons, at least, that it's been said to cause his death.
You know, such details they don't share with the public media. But we know that the Saudi-led coalition has been imposing a blockade on Sana'a International Airport. They have been blocking not only Yemenis, all the people who are in need to travel abroad for treatment from using the airport. So I believe that, and all the Yemenis believe that the Saudi-led coalition blockade contributed to worsening the health situation of Mr. Hassan Erlu. The people here today are really sad. They said that losing Mr. Hassan Erlu is a loss for the not only the Yemeni people or the Iranian nation, it's for the axis of resistance, and they are praying today for the for Mr. Hassan Erlu, and they will keep remembering his contributions to the diplomacy of Yemen.
Thank you for that. We appreciate it. Abdul Latif Al-Shali from Sana'a. Okay, moving on. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is holding the second day of large-scale military drills in the south of the country. The IRGC's naval forces have successfully fired anti-ship cruise missiles, destroying mock enemy vessels. They also flew assault drones to destroy fixed and mobile targets. The five-day maneuvers, codenamed the Great Prophet 17, are underway in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz regions, as well as the coasts of Hormuzgan, Bushehr, and Khuzestan provinces. The drills involve a variety of IRGC units. Iran regularly holds military drills to enhance the combat readiness of its armed forces. The ill-treatment of female Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails has sparked a wave of anger in the occupied territories. Hashtag Trending takes a review of the prisoners' situation, as well as social media reactions to the story.
Hello everyone, welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Reza. Palestinians have been subjected to the highest rate of imprisonment in the world since the 1967 Israeli occupation of their territories. It is estimated that over 700,000 Palestinians have been detained by Israel over the years, among them 10,000 women. On Sunday, a report shed light on the physical and psychological ill-treatment of female Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. These reports said that the prisoners were assaulted and severely beaten after protesting against a new series of restrictions. This is while rights groups are voicing concerns about the lives and well-being of these women. Social media is filled with comments, tweets, photos, and videos of the dire situation of female Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, and also numerous cases of women being subjected to brutal harassments by the hands of the Israelis. Let's go over a few of these cases. DT tweeted this: resistance factions said Israeli violations against female detainees in Israeli prisons are a heinous crime and a blatant violation, and they, quote, will not go unpunished. Hashtag women. Palestine lovers wrote this: Israeli special forces of Nahshon brutally attacked a Palestinian female prisoner while she was being transferred by the Bosta. Over here we have Free Hisham tweeting this: this is Sabah. Her father is currently dying in occupation prisons as Israel refuses to admit him to hospital or release him from his arbitrary detention. Free Hisham Abu Hawash now. Hashtag Free Hisham. Hashtag Freedom All. Unity is at the core of the Palestinian resistance against Israeli aggression. Women in the Gaza Strip have held numerous events and demonstrations to show their solidarity with females kept behind bars in poor conditions in Israeli jails, and also the administrative detainees who went on hunger strikes to protest against their indefinite jail time. Moving along to the next comment on Twitter by Al-Muhandisa Sara: Palestinian women in Gaza take part in a demonstration in solidarity with the 37 Palestinian women prisoners held in Zionist occupation prisons under very difficult conditions and subject to all forms of violation. The next tweet comes from Tukiko16: I stand in solidarity with the Palestinian prisoners on hunger strike to protest their imprisonment without charge or trial. Release them. Hashtag freedom all. Huda Kayed tweeted this. He wrote this: the Israeli prison forces took off the hijabs of some of the Palestinian female prisoners in Damon prison and sent the prisoners munaqadan in the solitary confinement after beating her. Hashtag Israeli crimes. Settler violence has always been an extremely disturbing feature of the Israeli occupation. That's according to UN experts. And all of this violence is happening under the protection of Israeli authorities. Now calls are growing on the international community to take urgent action to stop this violence, which you will see a part of in this next tweet by Fox News Network. They tweeted this: death to Arabs. Israeli settlers chant death to Arabs during a march in occupied West Jerusalem, that is Al-Quds. All right, moving right along to the next tweet by Free Palestine. They wrote, should this not be a concern for all Arab nations now normalizing ties with Israel? Good question. Benjamin Zach has our last tweet. The question is, why are the Saudis normalizing relations with a regime that chants such fascist bile like this? Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Hashtag Trending. Let's head back to the studio now for the rest of the world news.
In the United States, health officials say Omicron now accounts for around three-quarters of COVID-19 cases in the country. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that the new strain makes up over 95% of new COVID cases in three Northwest states. Separately, the World Health Organization has warned that there is consistent evidence that Omicron is spreading a lot faster than previous variants and causing infections even in vaccinated people. Concerns over highly contagious Omicron have prompted several European countries to tighten lockdown measures and to toughen border controls to stem the spread of the strain. Germany has announced tougher restrictions on arrivals from the UK, requiring all British travelers to have a negative test result or undergo a two-week quarantine upon entry. The rapid spread of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus is affecting the year-end holiday plans around the world. In the latest development, New Zealand says that its borders will remain closed for longer than expected. The country was just about to ease some of its tough cross-border restrictions, but it's now postponed until the end of February. Officials say the government needed a precautionary measure against the most transmissible COVID variant yet. Air New Zealand says the postponement of the reopening plans will affect more than 27,000 customers. So far, 22 people in the Pacific nation have been infected with Omicron, but there have been no reports of community transmissions yet. New Zealand has one of the toughest COVID-related restrictions in the world. Chileans hit the streets to celebrate the victory of leftist Gabriel Boric against his far-right opponent in the country's presidential runoff. Tens of thousands of Boris's supporters celebrated his win in the capital, Santiago, and other cities. The 35-year-old former protest leader secured nearly 56% of the votes to become Chile's youngest president. He took a 12-point lead over far-right populist José Antonio Kast. Boric and Kast emerged as the two leading contenders after none of the seven candidates secured more than 50% in the first round last month. Kast has conceded defeat and congratulated Boric on his, quote, great triumph. Speaking to supporters, the president-elect pledged to expand social rights and to govern with fiscal responsibility.
We're going to expand social rights, and we will do it with fiscal responsibility. We will do it while taking care of our macroeconomy. We will do it well, and that will allow us to improve pensions and health without having to go backwards afterwards. And we will have a balanced Congress that is already a reality, which means both an invitation and an obligation to dialogue.
Boric will be sworn in for a 4-year term starting from March of next year. He will be dealing with some of Chile's big challenges, including high inflation, the coronavirus pandemic, and social unrest. Chile has been rocked by massive protests against inequality and corruption in recent years. Boric will also be in power for the approval of a new constitution that is in the process of drafting. Commentator Tim Anderson says the victory of leftist Gabriel Boric in Chile's presidential runoff marks a shift from the country's past, largely defined by Pinochet and his dictatorship.
Gabriel Boric is one of the generation of student leaders from about a decade ago. He's from the far south of Chile, and he's been in parliament for 2 terms as a member of parliament. And this, his election victory now, is a very important break from the past, particularly because his opponent was very specifically aligned with the Pinochet past. And as you said in the introduction, he's going to preside over next year the implementation of a new constitution, which is the first time they've managed to break from the constitution set up under the Pinochet dictatorship.
And that is for this additional World News. It's bye-bye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
a simple question.
Who's really responsible for the deaths of migrants in the English Channel? The recent drowning of at least 27 migrants has led to renewed calls for a new approach to the ongoing crisis caused by those trying to start a new life in the United Kingdom. While British government officials claim it is on track to fix the broken asylum system, legislation has been criticised for making it harder for those arriving by boat to claim asylum in Britain. Those who speak for refugees even say the new proposals are actually cruel.
There's a pattern to the problem. A large proportion of these migrants come from Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan, all countries torn apart by conflict supported or even started by Anglo-American military escapades. Furthermore, while the UN Refugee Agency says deaths can be avoided with coordinated action, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and French President Emmanuel Macron have fallen out after the French president objected to Mr. Johnson's accusations that France has not done enough to stop migrants crossing the Channel. The impact of these political and military conflicts has turned out to be lethal. War and conflict disrupt countries and entire regions, forcing migrants to flee. In their desperate efforts to start a new life, some pay traffickers large sums to assist them in their efforts to cross the Channel to England. This leads to illegal immigration, increasing tensions between France and the United Kingdom, and deaths in the sea, while France and Britain blame each other for the migration issue and the human toll of those who drown.
To what extent is the UK responsible for the deaths of migrants in the English Channel? And who should be creating a new place for people to live after escaping from war-torn conflicts in which the United Kingdom plays a part? Simple questions with important answers. And we begin our inquiry with a straightforward and direct question. What does the public think of the deaths of 27 migrants who drowned while trying to cross the Channel? We put that to the public here in London. This is what they told us.
A boat which is about the size as that one that goes up and down the river here, the small one. 27 people were on it, and it capsized, and they drowned this last week. Yeah, and they just drowned, and their bodies were washed up on the shore. Yeah.
It's so sad to hear that. Yeah, I mean, things like that should not be happening in the future, of course.
It's an absolute tragedy, and I just wish that there were actually legal safe routes for people to get to Britain in order to claim refugee status.
The way that we talk about, you know, helping people and things like foreign aid, but when there's real issues like people trying to escape persecution, I think it's shameful that the government, you know, practically ignores or tries to deflect the problem.
I mean, it's just a shame, really, isn't it? I mean, it's upsetting when anyone dies, let alone migrants. I mean, there's the whole... I'm sure an overwhelming majority are just trying to escape what can be just explained nothing short of an absolute travesty.
Sad and disappointed.
I don't think that's very nice to hear at all.
They have family, they have mother, father, sons, daughter, and I think we or the government need to pay the attention in that case.
I think it's a terrible tragedy. I don't think anyone deserves to die when trying to gain freedom and have the rights that we should all be given as human beings upon this earth.
Well, obviously, wasted life is always a tragedy, but it would not happen if people didn't get on broken lilos and try to cross the busiest waterway in the world in treacherous weather.
Horrific, and why don't we have a secure way whereby these people fleeing from Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria are able to come to this country? I think we've opened the doors to, is it 3 million from Hong Kong? Why can't we find a humane, civilised way of helping these people?
It's very sad. It's sad that they have to move, like, come over here and try and find, like, obviously living over here. Like, it's sad that they have to do that, like, rather risk their life than just trying to find a better life where they actually are. I don't know, it's quite sad.
French government is responsible first because that's their border.
and then the British government should take care of their English waters or English Channel to control the border. I think nobody should risk their life for better life.
It's terrible. It shouldn't have never happened in the first place. I mean, they should just have safe passage to prevent this to start with.
First, I suppose, used the word tragic, and it is a tragedy. Obviously, I think everybody can be completely sympathetic to the situation. And, yeah, of course, I think everybody was greatly saddened by the situation, considering there were children involved as well, which makes it even worse.
Many are refugees from conflicts fought by Britain, including in Afghanistan, Iraq and other Middle Eastern countries. In the public's view, what responsibility does the UK have for these deaths?
I think we have a responsibility to provide safe passage for people to come here to attempt to claim refugee status. If we feel that we have the right to go and intervene in different ways around the world, then we have the responsibility to kind of follow up the results of that, I think.
Oh, we have massive responsibility. You know, it's anything that, you know, is initiated or guns that we sell to different parties in these conflicts is entirely, you know, the British government's responsibility to do something about it.
There's a very, very valid argument to make that to a certain extent, intervention in certain countries has worsened political situations. I mean, the arguable thing, you know, you can look at situations like maybe Syria or Iraq. Afghanistan is a very good one, I think.
I think we're responsible if we're involved in the conflict, but we're also responsible as a better off country to help people who are not safe.
It's hard to pinpoint the exact responsibility if the conflict that they're running from is caused by the UK or at least contributed to by the UK. There's definitely some responsibility there, in my opinion anyway.
Well, this should be something that maybe the governments of the world should look at, and those of us who have more to give should be able to give and allow safe haven for these people.
I think we do have some responsibility for taking our fair share of refugees from conflicts that we've had a part in.
They're mainly refugees from countries which have internal problems, and that's why there was an influence from the British. And there are a number of countries that they could have stopped in along the way if they truly wanted somewhere that was just safer than where they came from.
These crossings are a consequence of us so-called global Britain meddling around in the Middle East, so we have a lot of responsibility.
I don't really know who to blame, but I'm pretty sure both sides should be responsible, like both France and the Britain part, because is there a kind of shared channel, I guess, so.
There's some implicit responsibility because, you know, we've supported, we've armed these countries, we've been involved militarily, and we haven't supported some of the kind of the transportation of the immigrants in the first place that were suffering in these countries.
That's a very loaded question. I think, obviously, they've travelled many miles to get to the UK. Clearly, I think there's a lot of discussion about being housed in the first border call of whichever country they go to. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I'm not an expert in that situation, but I guess if they do get to the UK, they're entitled to a hearing. They're entitled to civil liberties, and obviously they're entitled to actually put their case forward. And that's the problem. I don't think they do get that. And perhaps the UK needs to have a rethink on that point.
Yes, some days ago also I heard about the problem in Afghanistan. I think that's something that is impossible to think in the 21st century.
French police have been seen to watch on as many refugees board boats to cross the channel. What do people here in Britain think of the French allowing migrants to make these hazardous crossings?
The French police have watched on. They've been filmed watching on while the traffickers send the boats across. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's difficult because if they... I don't know, that's a tough one. Because if they stop them, then they stop them being able to try and find somewhere safer. But at the same time, it's not a safe journey either. But I don't know, that's a tough one.
From a legal perspective, it very well could be justified. From my opinion, that doesn't come across as right.
Yeah, I wish that there was closer and better tempered and more even collaboration between Britain and France and between Britain and the rest of the EU. over this, to be fair. It's obviously not ideal that people are being allowed to launch themselves into small, unsafe boats into the channel. We've seen a result of that this year, so I wish that that wasn't happening.
If these start the war, obviously we should be taking responsibility for it. So, I mean, yeah.
The entire international community needs to take some responsibility and work together, like I say, to try and find a solution.
If you're seeing somebody getting on a boat that you know is probably not going to make it, I mean, in my opinion, I would be saying, don't make that crossing.
I think it's a responsibility of the French government.
Didn't see them to know if that's true or not. If it is, then they should be held accountable, but I haven't seen any evidence either way on that.
A very complex issue, I think. It's wrong of them to not intervene, although there's always circumstances around everything. But I think there's always a duty of care to people, no matter who or where they come from.
I can't understand how we haven't taken back control from the French police.
I think that's part of the reason why they want to come over here, because they're just not getting looked after very well, clearly, either. If they're getting allowed to get on the boats, causing tragedies, and they're allowing it to happen. We're trying to stop it, and they're allowing it to happen and allowing them to come while we're trying to stop.
I think British government, to be honest, because if you get involved in someone else's business, then there is always the consequences. So you have to face the consequences.
Basically, it's wherever they seek in, whichever country they look at to find asylum, that's where they should be housed in the first place.
I think what I probably would like to say, you wouldn't want to repeat, but I think that's absolutely disgusting. Clearly, if it's on the shores of the UK, we would expect the police to do their duty, and I think the same thing should apply to the French police.
The statistics underline the size of the issue and how little Britain is really doing to fix it. The Home Office plans to accept 5,000 people in the first year of the Afghan Citizens Resettlement Scheme, and up to 20,000 more afterwards. However, by late November 2021 alone, it is estimated that during this year, over 26,000 people, many from Afghanistan, had already arrived in small boats after crossing the channel illegally. Yet the Afghan conflict, in which the UK played a central role, generated 2.5 million refugees, of whom 2.2 million live in Iran and Pakistan, showing how small the UK's contribution is to fixing the problem it helped cause.
Who should be held responsible for finding new homes for refugees escaping conflicts fought by Britain?
I think a lot of responsibility therefore comes onto the government to make sure that we can give safe passage to these refugees and we can allow them in and look after them, as the conflict is our fault.
I believe they should have handled the issue like in a more precise manner.
Just because that's the country they went in first doesn't mean that country has equal responsibility for them being a refugee in the first place.
We're partly responsible, and countries should work together. Unfortunately, we seem to be global Britain going it alone, but we should work, like with the health crisis on COVID, countries should work together to solve these problems, be it climate change, refugees. It's a shame that we don't have anyone with any diplomatic skills from Lord Frost, Rab, Priti Patel, Boris, to make sure we are responsible global citizens.
It should be a shared effort between more governments. I'd say Britain, France, and whoever participated in those wars. That would seem fair to me.
Allowing them to make the crossing, letting people make something that's unsafe where they could possibly lose their lives is almost like a criminal act. They're complicit in the deaths in a way by letting that happen. Yeah.
Well, again, I think it's down to probably every country to do their part. And we hear all the figures on the media. You never know whether you're hearing the right figures or not. Fairly obviously, I think other countries in Europe probably have taken more than the UK, and possibly the UK need to rethink their policy in that respect.
Who's actually responsible for rehousing people who've been victims of conflict that Britain itself has led or been involved in?
I think if people have refugee status in Britain, then Britain is responsible for rehousing them. We shouldn't forget that Britain has, I think, around about 1% of the world's refugees here. We have a tiny, tiny percentage of the world's refugees. And if we want to see ourselves as global Britain, as a country that has a role on the global stage, then we need to step up and take responsibility for some of this.
I would not like to comment on that, yeah, but these things should not be happening. I mean, if they are watching it, they should have stopped it, of course.
I don't want to just pile blame onto my own government. It's obviously the responsibility of all governments to try and find a solution for these people.
But it is our responsibility as humans, as common man, to account for one another. So not just the government, but we all, as a collective, need to step up and do something about it.
My opinion is, rather than trying to figure out exactly who is responsible, is that if you feel you can do something, and as a country, if we feel we can do something, then we just should.
What is the public's advice to the British government about refugees who risk death in the process of trying to cross the channel?
I think these practices should be stopped. I mean, force measures should be taken to stop it, because if the people are trying to cross the channel, they can lose their lives. So, yeah, of course.
My advice to government would be to work with people, with our friends and colleagues in the EU, to step up and to act more humanely, to give people safe passage routes.
If the government wants to, you know, be re-elected, they need to take action and do something about it.
There are plenty of people in the country who would want to help. It's just reaching out and maybe putting together a system where people who can help and can provide housing, or even if it's just temporary. You know, there's a lot of people with spare bedrooms.
Everybody knows it's an issue, and it's been an issue for quite some time. My advice would be stop ignoring it. Do something.
Let's try and find a way where they don't have to risk death, and we can help them if it is that we're responsible.
Oh, I think, the Britain can help people who are homeless to find homes and so on.
I would say it's a very complex situation, but human life has to be saved amongst anything else. But I think rather than spending so much time trying to dissuade people from crossing, we should look at the reason why the people are going in the first place.
Work with other countries in a diplomatic manner to find a solution.
Should be able to give them set boats and, you know, better like accommodation to come over on, rather than just a dinghy that's probably going to sink halfway across. Like, we've got the boats, we've got like all the lifeguards and everything. We could be helping save more than anything. Do you know what I mean? We have lifeguards that swim the channels on a night time to make sure everything's all good. So we could be making things a lot safer, and communication with the other governments as well is even better. Like,
it doesn't matter what they're like, what country they came from, but their life matters, so they should be taken care of. They should have been taken care of.
Not all the immigrants are genuine immigrants. Most of them, they are economic immigrants. So finding ways to support them in their own country so they don't have to cross the borders. First place, if they have come over risking their life, then find the ways to settle them.
Create a safe passage. That's all we need, is a safe passage. They shouldn't be risking their lives in the first place. Otherwise, they are complicit in what's happening.
Again, I think we need to put something into place, a more meaningful policy in place to give these people a chance to have their story heard, to have their situation checked.
The 27 migrants who drowned in the English Channel as they tried unsuccessfully to reach British shores made the headlines. These fatalities also provoked a bitter war of words between British and French politicians after UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson attacked French authorities and, by implication, the French President himself, Emmanuel Macron, for failing to prevent the crossings.
Many make these dangerous journeys because of the impact of British conflicts on their homelands. A number of observers now believe that Britain must accept responsibility for causing much of the migrant problem. It seems a tragic irony that after travelling thousands of perilous kilometres from their war-torn homelands, desperate migrants seeking a new life drown within sight of the very country that turned them into refugees. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan al-la'in al-rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. In Amir al-Mu'mineen's eyes and in his understanding and in from his perspective, that there are many things which are considered to be human rights and human beings should have and should indulge themselves in. Among these rights is the right to learn. And the right to learn is in fact a very basic human right that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has bestowed upon His servants and upon His creation. Now, you might think, well, obviously everyone has a right to learn and everyone can learn. But how true is that statement? If we look at the world around us, we see that we are subjected to systems that dictates first what I should and should not learn, right? And two, which people should and should not learn. So you can see that we have this system in a place that tries to educate our kids into basically making them, you know, workplace, as we say, workplace ready. That's it. You've been taught to be a doctor, an engineer, I don't know, a chiropractor, just a job. That's what you've been taught. You haven't been taught to think. You haven't been taught to free your mind from the limitation of this world. So all the educational system that we have in most of the countries is in fact a system that just wants to make you a robot and a machine, where it does not want to make you a thinker or a creator. Thinking and a creation that is limited to the elite. And having said that, even, let's say, you know, even that basic knowledge that makes a worker out of you, that is limited to certain systems, certain countries, certain people, where you see other countries are deprived of that. Where, for example, if you look at sanctions, when you see sanctions on a specific country where they cannot, for example, do student exchange, for example, or they can't buy tools and equipment and materials, and especially in universities where they require, for example, a lot of equipments that, you know, due to the sanctions, they can't. Aren't they limiting knowledge here? Aren't they depriving people of knowledge? Or when they make a country, they turn a country into a war zone, and for years and years, kids don't get to go to school. Isn't that depriving people of their right to learn? And when we look at example, at countries where they have to suffer poverty for so many years, the last thing that people would want to think about is education, because they just want to feed themselves. So you can see that even though knowledge itself is a basic fundamental human rights or human right, you see that it's not accessible for everybody. And in some countries, once you finish high school, trying to get into uni itself is a problem, because there's a lot of tuition fees, there's a lot of college fees, and you have to end up paying thousands and thousands of dollars. Not every country obviously offers free education, and even those who offer free education, they say, well, once you get a job, we'll take it back from you. So there's nothing free there. Let us take a break, and then we'll continue shortly after.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. So we are looking at the rights for people to learn from the eyes of Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullahi alayhi. He says in a hadith, إِنَّ هَذَا الْعِلْمِ وَالْأَدَبِ ثَمَنُ نَفْسُكَ. This knowledge and this morality is the price of yourself. فَاشْتَهِدْ فِي تَعَلُّمُهُمَا. Then spend most of your time trying to learn these two things, knowledge and morality. This is what I and you are valued on in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and in the sight of people themselves, based on my position, based on my knowledge, based on my title. I get to be judged by people based on my akhlaq and morals and ethics. I get to be judged by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as well. So he says, because the value of you is based on these two things, then put your utmost effort in trying to do what? In trying to learn. فَمَا يَزِيدُ مِنْ عِلْمِكَ وَأَدَبُكَ يَزِيدُ مِنْ ثَمَنِكَ وَقَدْرِكَ. The more your knowledge, the more your morals increase, the more your worth value increases as well. So the more valuable you want to become, the more you have to learn. So you can see that learning is such an important part of my life and your life, to the extent that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, it is your value, it's your self-worth, your self-value. Now, when I'm deprived, and when there are so many price tags to learning, now, how am I going to get this value? So when we talk about a secular system that tries to put a price on even knowledge itself, now, what message are we giving to this world? How much are we giving to this world? We are turning this world into a machine that just makes profits for the elite. Well, as it's been said that Harvard is only creates people that end up going to work for the elite. And that's it. Just machines, just batteries. Where is the innovation here? How come we can't even come up with the simplest things these days? You know, we've been battling, for example, so many diseases for such a long, long time, even though medicine has advanced. We're still battling cancer. Or it could be treated if people put their minds into it. But pharmaceuticals, they don't want that, for example. So you see that we, even when it comes to knowledge, it's been very limited. Now, when it comes to even learning your faith, learning your religion, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that's your basic right. And you can see that in many countries, if you are from a certain background or from a certain religion, you find a lot of restriction on you. We won't allow you to open a mosque, we won't allow you to open a center, we won't allow you to teach your faith or spread your faith, because to them it's might considered to be a threat. And mind you, I'm not talking about a Western system only. Even when we have, when we look at the Arabic worlds, for example, if you are from a faith that they think is dangerous, and they call a disease, and they call a cancer, your life might be in danger if you're trying to learn or teach that faith of yours in this country. So we can see there is so much limitations when it comes to a person trying to learn. So it's no longer being provided as a human right anymore. It's the right of the elite to give to you or not. The right of those who are in power to give to you or not. Where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they emphasize on the fact that learning is a matter of a human right, and everyone should get this right given to them. If it doesn't, they have to seek it themselves, obviously, if they have the means to do so. So inshallah, we'll leave it here, and then we will talk about knowledge and the rights of seeking knowledge in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صل يا ربي على طه الأمين رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.